Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on One Bills Live. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The numbers to jump on with us, and we do have open lines for you there. To introduce how this could go, we get the insights of one offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, who was asked specifically about his thoughts on his receiving corps at this moment.
I love where our wideouts are right now. I know we've had some injuries, I like where we're at. I feel good about 1 through 8. You know, of being able to contribute for us, like all different skill sets. We're gonna have to figure out how to kind of put them in and figure out those positions, personnel groupings. And we'll get to the regular season for that. But I feel really good with where our wideouts are. Josh has a good comfort level with them, and I know we haven't got some preseason games with them. You know, it was good to get Curtis back yesterday, kind of moving around, and we'll obviously ramp him back up. But I have no questions with our wideouts going into the season.
So he's not worried. Not that I would expect a coach to say anything different. You publicly express confidence. He likes his players, and I understand that. I mean, he probably had input in acquiring a lot of them. And he feels good 1 through 8, Steve. There's only 12 on the roster.
Yeah. I'm there with him. I mean, we went through this last year, and it was more unknown last year than this year. The guys they signed last year had less pedigree than the guys they signed this year.
A little thinner on talent, right?
Yeah.
Like just pure talent.
Yeah, and then they go out and they hang 612 points on the league through the regular season and playoffs.
Like, and had guys in and out of the lineup during the season.
They were rinsing guys through there like yesterday's socks. I mean, so this group has a much better pedigree than that group last year.
Yeah.
And they crushed it last year.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
That whole side of the ball.
Yeah, you're just putting a check
just
in the box.
Run it back, you know?
Yeah, okay.
And they even got better. They're going to get better, and they're going to evolve. They're all that. They're all over it over there.
Okay.
They got dudes over there.
So fair enough.
There's some fans out there that are never, you know, Justin
coordinator
Jefferson
calling the plays and all of that. So
I'm not there. I'm right with Joe Brady.
Okay. We want to know how you see the receiver group shaking out, though, at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to join us. We lead off today with Michael in Rochester. What's up, Michael?
Hey, what's up, Chris and Steve? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And before I get into the question, I would say thank you, Steve, because the last day of camp at St. John's Fisher, you took a picture with me and my friend Luke, and I really appreciate it.
There you go.
To do it. Thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely. And as far as the receiver core goes, the last time I called, Steve, you weren't on the show. Maddie was on the show. And I said to her, do you think there's a chance that the Bills could keep 7 receivers? And she thought that probably the answer would be no. And the more I watch the preseason, I agree with her, but I do believe that Terrell Shavers is going to make the team. So whether it's Curtis Samuel being traded or Laviska Shenault being cut, I think the way it's going to shake out is that Terrell Shavers is going to make the 53-man roster. So I think he'll be one of the 6 receivers.
All right.
A lot of people are on that on the Shavers train.
Well, I mean, he's produced. Like, look, let's think about these first two preseason games, Steve.
Got the long one. It hasn't been all
sunshine and rainbows in terms of performance as a team or individually for a lot of guys. Shavers has shown up in both each games. Of the first two games.
Yeah. And he's the only guy.
Well, right. Let's remember there are starters that have sat.
Well, yeah.
There's top three guys that have sat. Shakir's been injured. He hasn't been a factor. Coleman didn't play last week. Palmer did. And so did Elijah Moore. And I think you could argue that Shavers had a better performance than Moore did, who struggled with a couple of drops. So he has done everything to make a case for himself. It's been interesting to see the team try to find a role or two on special teams for him as well, because as the fifth or sixth wideout on game day, you're not going to get a ton of snaps on offense, so you better be doing something on special teams for them. And I think that's where there might still be some question as to how he can capably serve every week on teams. I think that, and quite frankly, I think that's the only question. Because he's better on his releases this year than he was last year. He's getting open more consistently, and he's catching the football and making plays.
Shaves may make it, but it's not a given.
It's not a given.
It is not a given. We have seen...
And it's the special teams.
Think about
conundrum.
This. Think how many running backs have we all fallen in love with in these preseasons, and none of them make it.
Yeah.
None of them do. It's going to be it might be the same thing with Shavers again this year. Now, I'll say this. If they try and put that guy on the practice squad after the preseason he's had, he'll get a sign. Sign somewhere.
He'll get claimed.
But I don't know. I don't know. There's always...
And that's part of the equation in the decision-making process, too. Let's not forget that. If you have a player that you don't believe you have room for, but you know you can't get him through waivers on the practice squad, you have one of two options. You can either try to set him up try to trade him and at least get some value back for him, knowing he's probably going to get claimed. See if you can get a team interested enough to flip you a seven or something. Or you go one extra spot at that position, even if it's only for a week or two, just to hold on to the guy. I don't know. That's tough.
Yeah, it is.
You might have to come to grips with the fact that if you don't put him on your 53, he will get claimed and not clear waivers.
There's always, it used to be an old adage, and I've said it a bunch, but every training camp, there was somebody surprising who got cut or released, and there was also somebody surprising who made it, not even at the same position sometimes.
Yep.
So I think Shavers, Chenault, Codrington, all of that in there is the crux of our questions, I think.
Let's go to Tom on the west side next. What's up, Tom?
Good afternoon again, guys. My six would be, of course, we have Coleman, Shakir, Palmer, and Curtis Samuel. But my question about Samuel is he injury prone? And can he last 17 games? So now, I agree with Michael. And I'm going to throw Shavers in the conversation. And I think the odd guy out might be Moore, because I believe you were just talking about him, the punt returner.
Chenault.
Yeah, Chenault. Chenault is going to make it. Now, if they do keep seven, then, yeah, Moore is in that mix. But he's not going to be in that mix unless they keep seven, because I really think they're going to keep Chenault.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so it'll be Chenault would be six, and then Moore would be the seventh, I guess. But
yeah.
I mean, Keon, Shakir, Palmer, Samuel, and then you got Shavers, Chenault, and Moore.
Right. And I think we're going to have to wait and see what moves are made aside from just player cuts. Are there trades in the works? You know, those kinds of things. Because while the James Cook contract essentially will presumably bring them into cap compliance when they reduce the roster to 53 and then all contracts count, both active roster and practice squad, like all 69 players count towards your cap, that money saved with the Cook extension for this year essentially should make them cap compliant. But you have to believe that Brandon Bean's going to be looking for a little extra wiggle room in the event he has to make a signing, if there's a rash of injuries during the season, things of that nature. He might be looking to move some players off this roster via trade to save money on the cap as well. And so you would then look at veteran players who would save this team appreciable money via trade. It should be noted that Elijah Moore's contract is fully guaranteed. It's a one-year deal. It's $2.5 million with incentives that could push it to five. $2.5 million's guaranteed. That's not a lot of money. So if you had to move on from him and he's not good enough to make your roster, I don't think it would be the end of the world fiscally for the Bills. But it's still something that Brandon Bean and the coaching staff have to consider.
Yeah, that.
And maybe he's a guy that comes up as a potential move option in a trade.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because it really is tough to let one of these guys go. It's not like, okay, we're talking about the sixth wide receiver on the roster. Okay, it's not going to, you know, the roof is not falling.
Not haves and have-nots.
Right. But there is, as we read today early in the show, there are two or three teams out there looking for a guy. And it has...
Like a legit guy that can help them, not a back of the roster guy.
Yeah. So, you know, it's easy for us to say, well, we like this guy. Well, we like him. We don't like him better than the other four guys on the list. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what San Francisco and all these other teams are going to be looking at. They're like, yeah, we don't like him any better than that either. So we're not going to give you anything for him. It's not as easy as just picking up the phone and waving your magic wand. So I think they're going to have to make a really tough decision here, and you got to, when you start thinking about it, where it's not about playing wide receiver, it's about the 53-man roster and having the best one that'll help you win. You need guys at those spots, the five and six receiver, who do stuff other than play wide receiver.
And if you do determine that you want to go seven there at the receiver position, well, now you're robbing a spot from another position to make it work.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Like, you don't get an extra spot because you really like your wide receivers. You got to pull that spot from somewhere else. And where does that come from? And if you can work it out, because let's just say hypothetically the position's linebacker, and you say, you know what, we're only going to carry five linebackers on the roster instead of six because we can put this young linebacker on the practice squad. He'll clear waivers. We'll be fine. You know, Jimmy Charlo, for example.
Right, or we can go with five because we've got Joe Andreessen who can play both linebacker spots as backup.
Whatever the scenario you come up with, well, then that gives you the avenue to go fat at another position, whether it's receiver or something else. But we don't know what they're thinking about all of their other spots.
But here's the thing. We're talking about wideout. I don't think you go fat on the offensive side of the ball with this crew. You've got to give them more help on defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've thrown everything they've gotten – at that side of the ball.
Well, yeah, and maybe linebacker's a poor example because
I get it, though. But
there are linebackers that have to play on special teams,
too. But
the
point is valid. You're not skimming on the roster on the defensive side of this football team. I mean, you've got a huge margin of error on the offensive side because of 17.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was making chicken salad all last year.
Right.
And he was the MVP. Mm-hmm. And with the offensive line that you've assembled, even the MVP can sit there and hand it off half the time, or at least get you enough points, or you can hand Trubisky or Mike White can hand it off the rest of the game. I mean, that's what you're talking about. Yeah. This crew was hanging 30 points every week.
Yeah.
Every week. And they're better this year. They should be.
Should be.
I mean, they look better on paper. And I mean, so you don't need to give them 16 more guys over there. Just go.
Yeah.
It's the other side of the ball. And I've been saying this for a couple of weeks. This team will go further this year based on the improvement of their defense.
Yeah.
If you want them to go further, which means winning the AFC Championship game, getting to the Super Bowl, and maybe having a shot to win that, it's all about how much better the defense is going to be, in my mind.
Yeah.
If the defense significantly improves, they'll go even further than they did last year. And I say it again, they made it to 3 points away from the Super Bowl last year.
Right.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
He's an explosive talent, and like anything, you start overusing them, they're going to get wear and tear, and all of a sudden, you don't see the same explosive player. So it's us utilizing that. James is a guy that we do think can be a three-down player. It doesn't mean everything's perfect. There's some little things that he's already been working on and will continue to work on, but we're excited with where he's at, and he's still a young talent. And as we've said in here, don't think he's been overtaxed or a guy that, like, man, the tread on his tires is getting worn by any means.
Bill Sheehan, Brandon Bean, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. So, what is your guess to the question of whether this new contract for James Cook means more time on the field? Should it? Will it? I keep going back to, without ever hardly thinking about contract stuff, what the Bills have been of late as an offense has worked really well, and that includes Cook being off the field for more than half their plays. So why would they change it? They might think they need more from him at what will be his new pay rate, even though this year he went up, but his contract isn't until after. Would you expect the Bills to play him more often?
I would say no. I mean, could it go from, what was it, around 47% last year? Could it, you know, just situationally, you know, maybe they're in tighter games and he's, you know, what? To 52%, maybe 55%. Like, I don't think it's going to be significant. I just don't think they would have invested in Ty Johnson. It's modest, but still, like, if he were someone that you were thinking you weren't going to use in the same role, or maybe even a little bit more often, who knows? Then I don't think you commit to him the way they did. And I think you want to be careful to not use him. It's great that he doesn't have worn tires, to use Bean's metaphor there. Going back to college, even now into 3 years into the NFL, he's got a low amount of carries and touches for someone who plays running back. That's good. I wouldn't want to change that now that I've paid him. If anything, I want to make sure I protect that so that I can get, you know, it's a 4-year deal, really ostensibly 3 for $30. I can get 4 more seasons out of him, using him the way I'm using him, and max that out, rather than for a guy who's not a big, thick, bruising guy, more of a finesse-type runner. I think I want to keep using him the same way. I think you pay him to keep using him like you're using him. I think it would be very bad process to go, well, we paid him, so now we got to use him 69 or 70% of the time or something. Their offense worked extremely well with the guys in the roles that they had. And provided that Ray Davis still proves to be a dependable, you know, backup running back to spell Cook on, you know, just any down, not, you know, like Johnson has a very specific role. You know, Davis is more just, Cook is tired, you know, or just let's get you one every fourth series. We're going to get you out there, that kind of thing. provided you feel like you can depend on Davis to keep doing that, that there isn't some huge drop off or you're just not getting, you know, every time he's out there, you're in second and nine if you hand it to him or something, which I don't foresee. I don't think there's any reason to change Cook's usage. It's tempting. I think it's a reasonable question to ask. You know, fans have been the whole time we've been debating whether to pay him or not. And then since they paid him, you know, there's always somebody ready to tell you what a crime against football it was that he wasn't on the field at the end of the Chiefs game. And, you know, that really tells me you're predisposed to wanting to use him more. Now they've paid him, so you're going to want to use him more. And I just would say, like, just be careful about that. What I want them to do, what I think they'll do is what I'm suggesting. And it's one of these situations where I think it lines up. Like what I would do and what I think they'll do, I really am confident are the same thing.
That's a theme today.
I guess so.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's how we are as people, right? We sort of expect a certain thing, or you said it better than I am, want a certain thing, and then something comes along that makes you think that'll be confirmed. Confirmation bias. A little bit different from what you're saying, but still. Yeah, that's also for me, you know, just what you can get into trouble. I'm not saying there has to be a massive change, but just a minor one. You can get into trouble trying to build your thing, your machine, based on those kind of incentives. We have to play this guy. We drafted him in the first round. Now we're paying him $8 million a year versus two, whatever those things can be. And I think optimally your team does not care about that. But in real life, yeah, maybe you do.
I mean, I have no argument for anyone who wants to call us and tell us he's their best running back and maybe their most proven dependable offensive weapon outside of Allen. Yes, you're absolutely right. But to keep it, to optimize it, to make it keep working, I think, although the temptation, you know, it's pro sports, get the best guys out there. What are you doing? Like, I get that. I just think he's someone who's been successful being used this way. And that doesn't mean that it's proven that he can't be used more and still be effective, but I just think there's a balance there, and I think you run a risk of messing with a good thing if you do it that way. So I just would not want to. And like I said, I mean, the game situations may vary. I think you've alluded to this. You know, if they're in different kinds of games, you know, obviously if they're way ahead, then, you know, your number two running back or number three running back should probably be carrying the ball on those run out the clock type drives in the fourth quarter. But if those games are tight, then maybe his usage can tick up a bit, but I wouldn't expect it to be significant. You know, I don't think it's going to go from 47 to like 67 or something. I don't think that's in the cards. I don't think it would be smart. And I happen to think that the Bills are smart. Like, I don't agree with every choice they make, receiver, but I think they have their heads on straight about things like this, usage and what works and if it ain't broke and that kind of thing. And their backfield and their offense in general, really, is far from broken. But especially how they use their running backs. Johnson excelled in his role. Davis had a nice rookie season for a point of entry. And Cook scored 16 rushing touchdowns. Why do I want to risk anything by changing that? I think it's really a perfect setup.
Something has to change to them first, I would say, too. 22 running backs last year had more than 200 carries. Among them, Cook comes in last in snap share, 44.6. That 47, I hear 47, does that include the playoffs or why?
I don't know, but I've heard 44 and 47, and I don't want to be accused of slanting it by using the lower number, so I default to the higher number, but I'm not sure which one is 100%
there accurate. Might be a nuance here I'm missing, but no. According to Stathead, 44.6 was his number last year. That ranks last of 22 running backs that carried more than 200 times. He was at 207. Right above him is Bucky Irving, who went for 1,100 yards and 5.5 yards per carry for Tampa at 45%. At the top is Kyren Williams of the Rams at 81.5%. Bijan, Barkley are 2 and 3.
Wow, I wonder where those numbers, because the number I've heard on Kyren Williams when he signed his contract was 87%, and this is 81. So maybe it is playoffs.
Offensive snap percentage is what I've got. Maybe there's. I'll look to see if there's a different slant to that. Here's Sal with us. Hello, Sal. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling us.
Good. I kind of had a twofold question for you. Number one, in the wide receiver, how many we're going to keep? You think any of those guys have special teams swag that'll get them in? That can get them above a guy they may be better than?
I think the
Go
ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
My other question would have been just hearing the James Cook thing. I always fear guys that after they sign that big contract. I always think in a perfect world you get 11 guys that are all in their last year of their contract and you're going to get the best out of them.
Well, I want to give most of these guys, if not all of them, more respect than that. I think, you know, Josh Allen made a monster deal and did any one person question his motivation or incentive after doing that? I think that it is insulting to players that like they won't give me their best if they've been paid, you know, in advance, if you will.
Yeah. On the receiver question, as it pertains to special teams, Shavers has started being used on some punt coverage, but it's been pretty minimal. It's not like he's a heavy in the rotation there. Beyond that, it's mostly depth guys. I think the name for this now, as we get this far into camp and cut down day is now less than a week away, right next Tuesday is that day. I feel like Shenault is the guy for this. He's been working on the coverage units. You're seeing him return kicks, of course, which he's done in college and in the NFL, and the Bills have even been giving him a spin at punt returner, which I think is notable because they had an excellent punt and kick returner in Codrington last year who really just cannot be on the field as a defender. Like, it's just not... it's not any place you want to be. And if they think Shenault can handle both return jobs and be something on offense, which, you know, it's going to be he's a depth guy, but it's a way to make sure you get him a uniform and maybe you can use him on some different things. He's got more of a bigger body than they have outside of Coleman, really. I feel like Shenault is the guy I'd be looking toward. Like, when I'm thinking about finding a way to divest myself of Curtis Samuel, let's not say like Shenault replaces Samuel, because I think everyone would just move up one notch. Samuel might be 4 on the depth chart, followed by Moore and then Shavers. I think those guys all would bump up one. Shenault becomes your 6th guy, but he's getting a uniform because he's a core special teams guy. I don't think they have another guy that is being utilized that's realistic to make the roster. I mean, KJ Hamler also has return ability. I don't know that he's making your team at this point. I feel like Shenault, they're giving that a look, and I think it's probably there's intent behind it.
Do you think he looks good?
I think he looks all right. I mean, I don't know. I think he looks
okay.
Fine is the best I can do.
Fine at best, I was going to say.
Yeah, I don't know. But
I'm not watching Hard Knocks, though, and you are.
I think I didn't really see him on Hard Knocks at all.
No?
Hamler's been a star on Hard Knocks.
Really?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
He had the little scooter. There was
I love a scooter.
He had a little scooter, like a little kid scooter, and there's a big personality there. He was featured again last night. In some like team building exercise they did with a game that they had a guy come in and play with everybody, and Hamler was central in that. Anyway,
was it interesting?
It was maybe the most interesting thing about the show. I think the show is on borrowed time. Like, I don't know what the numbers will be. I know Bills fans are loving it. I'm enjoying watching it, but it's not anything like Hard Knocks was known for being anymore. It's a team movie.
The shark has been jumped.
Yeah.
With Hard
so
Knocks.
I don't know if viewership is still up, they'll keep making it, I think. But if the numbers take a hit, like I would expect objective football fans, I'm not seeing any like reviews outside of Bills fans going, I love it because Deion Dawkins is driving a drift car around a parking lot and, you know, whatever. And again, I'm enjoying all that, but fans around the league watching it, looking for the stuff that Hard Knocks was known for, I would think are going, this is like a PR video. Like, what am I doing?
Have they even had a fight?
So I just don't, I think it's on borrowed time. I don't know.
Have they even had one fight? Hard Knocks wants to be in Tennessee, where the quarterback is fighting guys, or in New England, where the coach is involved in scraps.
There was a scrap in the joint practice from last night.
That's right.
And I think McDermott was heard yelling for Alec Anderson to stay out of it. Like, don't get in there, Alec. Don't get in there.
Let him work it out.
Worried he's going to get in there and make it worse.
That guy has a trident.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, Chenault, I feel like Chenault, I think when camp started, I thought he was easy to even forget about that he was on the team. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. I want to go so far as to say I'd be surprised if he doesn't make it, but it won't surprise me if he does.
I think we're looking for that other safety to play alongside of T-Rap. There's been really good moments for all those guys back there, Young and some of the more veteran guys that are back there that have played for us. But I think we're still looking to find who is it going to be and how consistent can they become and how quickly can they grow if they're a younger player. And you're always looking to figure that other piece out. Right now for us, we know who T-Rap is. We know what he brings to the table. It's what other piece can go along with T-Rap.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott on the safety position. And I think that was mostly about Cole Bishop there, even saying the words about a young player. How fast can they develop? How fast can they come along? So McDermott on the safety position, which right now up in the air a little bit. I still think it's very, very likely that Cole Bishop is going to be out there week one against the Baltimore Ravens. I guess that doesn't have to be true, though. Damar Hamlin, they trust, of course, and he's gotten some first-team reps throughout camp and the preseason as well. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off today. Nate is in. 803-0550 is the phone number. So Gabe Davis is reportedly visiting with the team today. Yesterday when the news came out, Jeremy very unhappy about it. Not a Gabe Davis guy at this point, which I don't know how many there are. I think it's tough to figure out sometimes what his reputation is amongst Bills fans. I think some Bills fans think he is the most overrated player ever, and I think some Bills fans think he is the most underrated player ever. And they will clash in group chats for the rest of time. Does it fit? Is this a good idea at all to bring him back? The one thing about anybody that signs Davis, because of the language in his contract with the Jaguars, however that works, he is getting all that money paid by Jacksonville. So any team that gets him is going to get him for the vet minimum. Like, he has no incentive to sign for anything more.
Yep.
So if you get him, you're getting him for the vet minimum. But who is he displacing? Is he playing meaningful snaps? Is he inactive?
Is he even healthy is my question.
Is he healthy is another part of it.
Yeah.
The fact that they're having him in on a visit, though, I think means they want to know the answer to that question. Is he healthy?
Yeah.
From a jumping off point. And I said this yesterday, but it's not my favorite idea at all. I personally would rather they go with, you know, even Shavers at the bottom end of the depth chart, or Elijah Moore and Samuel keep their roster spots, and you see that out and see if you can get anything out of those two in the regular season. The reason, though, that I wouldn't be stunned if the Bills actually did sign Davis is I've continued to think all throughout camp, this is part of why I thought there was an opportunity for Shavers to make the team, is they don't, in my mind, have a plan B to Keon Coleman at the big X receiver position that was last year split between Coleman and Mac Hollins, doing the dirty work at receiver, blocking at receiver, clear out routes down the field. Like, Coleman did a lot of that last year, but so did Mac Hollins. And if you do believe that
they miss Mac Hollins,
that they wanted to keep him,
yeah,
and he's just a football nomad that wants to go place to place to place, and he went to New England for maybe more money. if you believe that they wanted to keep Mac Hollins, but Bean said you have to ask Mac, right, after free agency happened, then do they have a guy like Mac Hollins in their receiver room behind Keon Coleman? Insurance in case, hey, either Coleman gets hurt or, you know, this isn't really going well. Him playing the X. All those people out there that think that Coleman is more in line to be a big slot in the NFL, like, oh, that's kind of looking more like reality. That he should be a guy we move around more and he's not as, you know, well suited to play this spot. He kind of has to, though. Who else does it?
Yeah.
And maybe your answer, if he was on the roster, would be, well, Gabe Davis does it. Gabe Davis does the dirty work. Gabe Davis plays the X. Gabe Davis blocks for me in the run game at the receiver position. That he is your Coleman plan B. When I don't know that they currently have one, is Palmer going to do all that stuff? He's not really the body type and the type of player I would think is in line for that. Elijah Moore certainly isn't. I think I would get to Shavers. So yep. I don't think I would be stunned if they signed Davis.
I think if you're asking me on a one-to-one swap, Gabe Davis in the exact role Mac Hollins had, I would say that in almost every way, Gabe Davis is probably a better wide receiver. The only difference is that Mac Hollins was a core special teams contributor.
He was.
And Gabe Davis is not going to do that.
He didn't even do that as a rookie. I looked that up yesterday.
So that's my only hesitation, because the coach has said as much, like, if you're the fourth or fifth wide receiver on this team, you're going to probably need to play special teams.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, I assume you have to keep Curtis Samuel. Short of somebody wants him and you can trade him for a seventh.
And who's going to want him?
I don't know.
Right now, I don't see
that money
being likely.
So, like, it seems like you have to keep him. So does that mean that Elijah Moore is the odd man out? It might be. And if you're telling me then you have Curtis Samuel as your number four receiver, he doesn't play special teams. Well, now Gabe Davis is my number five receiver. He also doesn't play special teams. Mm-hmm. Are we keeping six receivers?
None of which play special teams.
None of which play special teams. And none of which... Yeah. And then we still haven't even talked about, okay, well, then where's the kick returner coming from?
Right. Which LaVisca Chenault has gotten a lot of run at that.
Yep.
There's Codrington, who they might just throw back
KJ
there.
KJ Hamler.
KJ, that's another receiver that... I guess that would be a receiver playing special teams. Yeah, it's tricky to figure out. You almost really, to make it all fit in easier, you would want to have a player that's not a receiver do all that special team stuff. Like, who's going to be the gunner? Oftentimes I have one receiver, or on kickoff I've got a receiver, or on wherever. And I've got an extra corner that's going to do that. Or I've got an extra safety that's going to do all that. Hey, maybe Derek Forrest's path to making the roster. You're going to do all the special team stuff that Mac Hollins used to do. But I don't know that they have the numbers for that, or they have a guy that's ready to jump right in and do it. You're right, though. Like, the idea of Davis coming in and being what Mac Hollins was as a contributor on special teams, that probably seems unlikely. I mean, he could probably find a team like maybe the team he visited yesterday in Pittsburgh that wouldn't ask him to do that. He's played 70 special team snaps in his career, and 65 of them were in the first two seasons for Davis. 7% in his rookie year and 8% in his second year. That's nothing. Nothing for him. 803-0550 is the phone number. On Davis coming back, potentially, he's on a visit today, seemingly, and whether it's a good idea or it's a terrible idea, let's go to CJ in Buffalo first up. What's up, CJ?
Hey, good morning, guys. I believe that Gabe Davis will be a great comeback for the team, because you know exactly what you're getting. It's not like you're walking into this and I don't know exactly what to expect, or our offensive coordinator has to build a rapport with him, and our quarterback got to figure out how to utilize him or get him the ball quickly and things. We don't have any of that we have to guess about. We know exactly what we're getting. We don't have to pay him. Like, it's a win for the Bills. Yes, you want to talk about the special teams, but I wouldn't talk about the special team players. I would talk about the special team rules and how close you start to the 50-yard line. What is it, 30, 35-yard line?
Yep.
It's like, yes, we want certain things, but at the same time, you can manipulate the game and get what you want. You know exactly what kind of deep threat he is. He may open it up for a Kincaid, or Dawson Knox like he did in the past, because you know he's a deep threat. Ask the Steelers from in our own back line, in our own end zone, he threw a touchdown. He's deceptively fast, and we need things like that. So was Matt Collins. He was our deep threat last year, which was crazy. That blows my mind. But we need that in our offense, especially he's coming to an offense where Josh Allen actually has an offensive line now. He didn't have that the last time we had Gabe Davis, not to this extent, at least. I think it changes a lot on top of the run game. I think Gabe Davis with his blocking, play action works a lot. There's a lot of positives to bringing Gabe Davis back that outweighs the negatives. Like, I understand some people may not, but we didn't want him to go because he was a bad receiver. We just didn't want to pay him that second large contract or his second contract and be a large one. That's the only reason I can think of actually not wanting him here. Other than that, like, nobody was really trying to kick Gabe Davis out the door. We may want more from him, but he showed up in a playoff game where Diggs did not. Those are just positives that I'm looking at.
Yeah. Thanks, CJ, for the call. The one thing, though, I would really wonder and maybe even bet against is that, hey, deceptively fast, all those plays down the field that he made for the Bills over the years, as a guy that really wasn't like a burner, I think that probably doesn't age great. If the foot speed already isn't that great, as he gets older, and he's not really that old, he's only 26, which is kind of amazing, but he's had a couple of injuries, and even a small, marginal decrease in speed for a guy like that that is not a burner and it lives off downfield routes, I think that can be a death sentence to a player
like
that.
He was kind of the jump ball guy that's not really that good at jump balls, to be honest.
That too.
That's what they've got Keon Coleman for. By the way, they also had basically the exact same offensive line in 2023. They just had Mitch Morse at center and Ryan and Connor McGovern at guard instead of center.
That's true. Very
clear. I mean, it's basically the exact same offensive line.
Yeah. He did show up in a playoff game.
He did.
He did show up.
And it probably hurt him and how he was projected for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely right. That's definitely right. I mean, the expectation of it, it still will go down in history as one of the greatest performances in a Bills playoff game ever. So it is legendary in that sense. I want to get to more on the contract part of it and how it ended, because like nobody wanted to kick him out the door. Well, listen, when you know what his market is going to be, that's the same thing. You know what he's going to cost. You know what he's going to come close to costing. And the Bills, I thought rightfully so, didn't value him the way that the Jaguars did at that time, which was, I still think, a crazy number to pay a guy like that.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, number one, that's my job, is to adjust as need be, and you've got the reigning MVP, and I feel like he's shown to this point that he's in a good spot. So, you know, Josh is in a spot where he and I talk about that, and listen, he's always going to want to play. That's what competitive people want to do. They want to play, but I have a responsibility as well to protect him, and in doing so, protect our team. So, again, I think he's on schedule, and he's looked good. You've been out there at practice, and you've watched. He's looked good to this point, and I feel good about where he's at right now.
Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott speaking with the media just a few minutes ago and did confirm Josh Allen not going to be playing in the third preseason game, thus meaning he will not play at all in this preseason. That's the first time in his career, because he did play a little bit last year, that first game. I think he had like three passing attempts, and that was it for him in the preseason. Was maybe supposed to play last year's Pittsburgh game. Weather kind of took him out of that. This year, though, no such thing. Just not going to play. Looks good in practice. They feel good where he's at. Cole Bishop, though, safety. He is going to play. To what extent, we don't know yet. We'll obviously find it out on Saturday night. But after having 12 snaps last week against Chicago, the expectation is they'll ramp him up maybe even more. McDermott, I think even the wording he's using is build the calluses up. You know, just get him going. as quickly as they can.
I think safely you might look at two or three drives, depending on the success and extent of how long those drives go. I'd imagine two or three drives is a safe assumption here for me. That said, it could go longer. I don't know necessarily. Like, the Callis's comment is the one to me that's like, oh, they really want him getting live reps. How rusty has he been?
That's the big question.
If he gets more than a quarter,
where if we're at halftime, it's like, man, Bishop's still in there.
Yeah, if we're pushing halftime, or goodness forbid, if he's in the third quarter,
right?
How rusty has he been?
And how much do they want him to go? I don't imagine that at all. I'm with you. I think two or three drives is
First quarter.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right.
Yeah. If we're getting to halftime or third quarter and he's still in the game, then you're kind of like, okay, how raw did he end up jumping into the Chicago game? And that's probably why he looks so shaky.
Well, I mean, he practiced, what, 2 or 3 days before jumping into that? So, yes. I mean, that tells you that right there. 803-0550, the number to call. Speaking of the defense, by the way, most of this morning I've been kind of just checking out the last year's team defensive stats. It's been a big topic, discussion, discourse between Bills fans of where the defense is at. Have they gotten better? Where were they at last year? How bad were they last year? It is interesting, though, to look at – I'm on Pro Football Reference. Just looking at where these other teams are at. Yes, we know they dominated through takeaways, right? Like that was their big thing. You look at just total turnovers or takeaways, they're second in the NFL. Tied first is Minnesota and Pittsburgh. Green Bay is also up there, but the Bills find themselves in second at 32. But it is also interesting to see that in terms of rushing yards given up, they're towards the bottom end of the NFL. And I don't mean that in a negative. I mean that they did not give up actually that many rushing yards. It was passing yards that they gave up a lot in. And I mentioned this. Their pass defense was the one that was the worry. This is going 1 through 10, 1 being the worst, or 1 through 32, 1 being the worst, 32nd being the best. Buffalo comes in at 9 in terms of passing yards given up. Part of that is because you're ahead. Teams got to catch up to you, right?
But the other part of it was, the corners got rebuilt for a reason.
Mm-hmm. And I look at some of the teams also in the top 10. Again, the Bills find themselves in 9th. Minnesota's 5th. Tampa's 4th. Detroit's 3rd. Baltimore is 2nd. I mean, mixed in there are bad teams. Jacksonville, New Orleans, the Colts. Carolina is right below them. But that's also when you look then at total yards, you start to get to the bad teams. Carolina, Jacksonville, New Orleans, the three worst defenses in terms of total yards given up. I also look at percentages of drives ending in offensive score. That's offensive score. So it's not just the bend, don't break, only give up a field goal. That is all of this.
Right.
So it's not just touchdowns. It's not just touchdown percentage. The Bills are towards the bottom of the list, 22nd. They're right with Kansas City, Detroit, Baltimore, Houston. Houston might be one of the better defenses in football. We got Carolina, Jacksonville, and the Jets, almost around 50%. Carolina was, by the way, at 51.4%. Bills, though, they do lead the NFL in turnover percentage, drives it ending in a turnover, 17.5, an almost full percentage higher than the second place team being Minnesota at 16.6. Funny enough, Derek, I look at all of this, and we've talked about it too, how the Bills' turnover luck actually isn't really all that luck. It's more that's kind of what they do. It does lead me more to believe with the defense, they're really not that far off. This is with a safety room of Hamlin and Rep that really by the middle of the year, we all kind of knew was not working. This is with a linebacker room, that was dealing with injuries at the middle linebacker, at the outside linebacker, a corner room that eventually came to the realization Russell Douglas can leave and he's not picked up yet by anybody, and Elam can be traded for a 7th-round pick. And a defensive tackle room, or defensive line room, that has a defensive tackle in Ed Oliver that takes a huge drop-off in production, going from 9.5 sacks to 2. And Rousseau being kind of the only guy that is regularly getting production.
At least pressure, not production.
Yeah, at least pressures. I look at a lot of these numbers and I do wonder, how far are they actually off if Bishop is solid? I'm not even asking for Pro Bowl, solid safety with Taylor.
If he's a starter.
Yeah, just a starter.
And the thing about that is that if you get a chance to really get his legs underneath him and he looks comfortable and you start the season with Rapp and Bishop as your starters, then you hope through the rest of the season that Bishop continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Because, let's be real about this, Taylor Rapp is a heat-seeking missile. Friendly fire will happen at some point, and I do expect that Taylor Rapp will miss a couple games. So can Bishop become the focal point of this defense? That's what you're really looking for. Because if it's got to be Bishop and Hamlin, Bishop has to be the roamer.
Mm-hmm.
Are you setting him up for that even with Rapp on the field? Because Rapp had a little bit of a tendency last year to be the playmaking safety of the duo. I mean, of course, the second safety is Hamlin more times than not.
Yeah. I really liked defense coordinator Bobby Babich speaking with the media yesterday. Sal asked the question about the changes of the safety position. We talked a little bit with him about it as well, and how it's more become about spacing and just guys filling in the space and stuff like that. So maybe that is also where they're trying to get with Rapp, where you can be interchangeable. That it doesn't just become he's the heat-seeking missile or the big play guy.
It's the box safety versus the roamer.
And they can become interchangeable in those roles, because that's where Hyde and Poyer eventually got, is that they became interchangeable in their duties. And really, if one was down a little bit, the other could pick themselves up. And that also, though, comes with time. I think that's also where McDermott is wanting so badly for Bishop down to catch up almost at a speeded process, is because we need you to catch up to where Rapp is so that you both can play your best ball.
Right.
Rather than we're all blaming Rapp because he missed an assignment, when in reality it's like, he's being hurt by his essentially sidekick. Same could be true for Bishop with Hamlin, and being with the backup defense maybe didn't play as good of a role for him.
There's an example on that, the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Taron Johnson has been in this league for several years as one of the best nickel corners in the league. Codrington's the starting corner in that one at the nickel position.
Mm-hmm.
There's a switch that probably needs to be made, and Taron Johnson would probably call that so that Bishop doesn't gamble on the wrong route with Zacchaeus. Next thing you know, Zacchaeus beats Bishop into the inside, gets back into the seam, and Hamlin can't make that tackle, and the night is off and running because it was nothing but more misery after that.
Yeah. We'll see. 803-0550, the number to call. Want to jump on the show today, and let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll start today off. David on the line. David, how are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you guys? I appreciate you taking my call.
Doing well.
Thanks for calling.
I have a question regarding Josh Palmer, and I hope that's not off topic, but in the offseason, I was not very high on him, and maybe I'm in the minority. I was, for the money, I was much higher on Dyami Brown coming in. And I keep hearing a lot of people talk about his analytics regarding his ability to get open. And I keep, that seems to be the narrative. He gets open. And my question is, and I don't know if you guys have taken a look, but why was his stats not in line with his ability to get open if he's so good at that?
Mm-hmm.
With a QB like Herbert throwing to him, it seems like having, I think it was 30-something catches and one touchdown, feels to me like he didn't necessarily get open all that much, or was there something else going on there that I'm unaware of? But I just keep hearing that regarding him getting open, but yet the stats don't seem to match that, and I'm curious your opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David, thanks for the call.
I have two words for that, David, to help you out. Greg Roman.
Yeah, he's a big part of this. Real quick, on the separation stats, because that is a big thing with him, and it is true. In 2024, he ranked 8th out of 131 qualified receivers in a separation score against man coverage, according to Fantasy Points data. He also ranked 12th in the separation score overall and 16th in route win rate, to the Greg Roman point. He is also kind of trying to find a new role with the team, with the new offensive coordinator,
who loves running the football and doesn't have the most, creative pass concepts.
I'll also say, too, I wonder how much the team was moving on from Palmer. He picked up an injury in his third year. If you look from his rookie to his sophomore campaign, there was a jump up for him. He goes from, in his rookie year, starting just 5 games and having 49 targets, about just under 400 yards, 4 touchdowns. He then jumps up
107 targets in his sophomore campaign, 72 catches, 769 yards, 3 touchdowns. Then it drops. He picks up an injury in year 3, and then in year 4, the last year with the Chargers, it's the Greg Roman offense. They've brought in Ladd McConkey. He doesn't really seem to fit what they're doing. Palmer is sort of the analytical darling. And it's not necessarily he has a quarterback like Herbert. Even look at Herbert's stats last year. Herbert was a 5,000-yard passer not that long ago. And last year, I think he has under 4,000 yards. I think he's at like 3,500.
Correct.
If I'm remembering that correctly. And so his passing numbers themselves also dropped incredibly low. Palmer, I'm not looking at a guy thinking he's going to be a 1,200, 1,300-yard receiver. Could he have a Jerry Jeudy-like resurgence? Sure. I don't want to say he can't. But I think I'm trying to find a way to look at him more as in a mix between that sophomore and third year kind of run there. Where do I think he's going to have 107 targets? No, not in this everyone eats kind of mantra. I do think they have more talent, Palmer being a part of that. But I think it was really a mix of him picking up an injury, not really fitting in a system, and that system very much going away from throwing the ball like the Chargers had been in his second year when, you know, he's also dealing with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams as well. He's a third receiver for them getting like 107 targets, third or second receiver for them getting 107 targets.
Mind you, so I looked at the passing attempts by team from like the couple of years here with the Chargers. Last year, they throw the football a grand total of 510 times.
Mm-hmm.
Year prior, 623. And in 2022, when Palmer pops off, 711 passing attempts. It's Greg Roman.
Now, it is funny on that. You bring up 2022. I thought he was more third or fourth receiver for them. He is second in targets on that team.
He's forced into that role.
But even then, I mean, he's right up there in terms of yards. He finishes second in yards on that.
Because there's injuries to Keenan Allen and Mike Williams in that season.
Mm-hmm. But he does well in the role that's given to him.
Exactly. So, and this is a team that threw the ball 711 times.
That's crazy.
That's 711 passing attempts.
That's so crazy.
For Palmer to be second on the team in receptions mm-hmm. and receiving yards. And then in 23, they're a disaster class. Palmer gets hurt as well, but like they're a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Easton Stick is in for like the last half of the season. Good luck. And then last year, it's Greg Roman, and they throw the ball less than 550 times, which is a far cry from even 2023.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he doesn't have the stats for the passing yards, because the ball's not in the air as much. You could still qualify analytically for pass separation for when you are running routes.
Oh, absolutely.
But there are less opportunities for you to actually get the football.
Now, what I do like for him, though, is the yards per reception went up a lot in the last 2 years.
So there's
that's
more
something to keep an eye on.
So that means that he's making the most of it, which leads to the separation analytics actually kind of proving something a little bit with production in terms of yards per reception. And I do think that means that you have something here in Josh Palmer that is noteworthy. Because even with the lack of production within the offense of Greg Roman, he's third on the team in receiving yards. The reason he's third is because for some reason they have to throw the football to Quentin Johnson. Quentin Johnson, 91 times.
He got 91 targets?
He got 91 targets.
Wow.
He got 55 receptions out of it.
Huh.
And then Ladd McConkey is also there. But Palmer has repeatedly been a top three option for this team over the last 3 years. That's not a bad player to get.
No, it's not a bad player to get. I do wonder, though, with how the Bills also run their passing game. I mean, last year you mentioned they had 510 Chargers, 510 passing attempts, where the Bills had 520. I do wonder, though, does that – and I brought this up and kind of theorized about it.
Because with those better have been talent, more balance.
Yeah, but with better talent, do they maybe throw the ball more? Do they feel comfortable with – we heard Sean McDermott talking about it, and players, Deion Dawkins, coach Joe Brady, talking highly about Keon Coleman. Does that – I'm not going to say they're going to throw 630 passing attempts. I'm not saying that. But do they maybe throw 550? Is there 30 more passes in there where they feel better about doing that? And Palmer could be somebody, Coleman could be somebody that takes advantage. Or are we looking closer actually to what the Chargers were in 22, where it's kind of just a bunch of guys. No one's a 1,000-yard receiver, and it's just a bunch of guys that have around 700, 800 yards. That may be true to it. That doesn't mean it's going to be bad. You look at the Bills' offensive statistics last year, they were great. Constantly getting first downs, scoring percentage was high, and this is with a passing attack that needed to go out and trade for an Amari Cooper. They needed to go add that. They dealt with injuries even to Cooper and Coleman. Kincaid deals with injuries, and they're still able to
Matt
put up
Collins
those points.
Matt Collins was a nice little Colt following toward the second half of the season, but you had to get to the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of dreadful to start.
Yeah, the Houston game when they target him a lot, and you're like, oh, no.
And it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Like he really needed time on task with Allen, and eventually they got to that. But Palmer, it's interesting because I look at Herbert, and Palmer's stats I think are fine. If you add that and you get pretty much like a 600-yard receiver out of that in free agency in the first year, I'm fine with that. Because that also means he's probably, what, second or third on the team in receiving yards based on how the Bills are balancing out the offense?
Mm-hmm.
Sick. All right, so you got exactly what he is. But I looked at Justin Herbert again. And the first two seasons, yeah, he throws a good amount of touchdowns.
A lot of yards, too.
And a lot of yards. And in 2022, he does throw for a lot of yards, but he's only got 25 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And then 20 and 23. Is Justin Herbert even really that good?
No, I think that's a fair conversation to have. By the way, he had 3,800 yards passing last year.
The moniker, though, is If Man.
Mm-hmm. He has been that of the constant questions. He does not really perform well in the playoffs. We've seen that with both Jacksonville and then Houston. He threw three interceptions total last year in the regular season. He reached that or surpassed. I think he surpassed it.
He threw four in the game.
He threw four in the playoff game against Houston.
And it just, but like, I've never really thought that Justin Herbert is that good. So
his first 2 years, I think I was there.
His first 2 years, he started hair on fire, absolutely. But I don't know. I don't think that the fact that he hasn't kept it up. I mean, yeah, he gets hurt 1 year, and then the second year is Greg Roman, who I'm absolutely blaming more than anything. But when he's asked to carry the load, he doesn't do as good of a job. And there's a lot of speculation about Herbert in particular of how great he can be. Even if Justin Herbert is a good quarterback in this league and a great quarterback even, there's still a step up from what Palmer has gotten to what he is getting.
He's a fun piece and I'm excited for him.
Uh-oh, I forgot my assignment. Do I have a minute?
What were you going to do? You were going to do something?
I was going to report to you on how Jim Kelly averaged 20 years per catch
in
his career.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, you got to, you know.
He had a 35-yard reception and a 5-yarder. He had two catches.
That'll work.
See if either comes to mind. One was in the 35-yarder was against Denver, the Cornelius Bennett game.
The Cornelius Bennett game, not the three touchdowns in a minute and 17 seconds game. That's right. Not the Cornelius Bennett game. That's okay. The Cornelius Bennett game is like the first Bennett game or
his first game with the Bills.
Right. Okay.
They beat Denver.
Yeah.
And it was blacked out, so I can't tell you what this play looked like. I've never seen maybe any highlights from that game.
I think there's a Denver game that I was at that I always have trouble placing, whether it was at or near the end of high school or in the late 80s. Like I have never been able to nail it down. I think I went with my a friend from high school. Maybe we were still friends, because we did go to ECC together, me and Tom Mahalski. I feel like we were at that game. Is the first Cornelius Bennett game the same Denver game where they were rotating quarterbacks?
No.
Okay.
There were a lot of Denver games.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them in there. Yeah. That would have been 92, I think. This is 87.
Okay.
There's 89 on Monday night where they lose. There's 94 on Monday night where they win. There's 90. I mean, most famously, you mentioned that game already. Right. Yeah. A lot of home Denver games those years.
I think this game is before I moved away. So it's maybe when Bennett gets here. When does Bennett get here?
October 87.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm at that game.
Okay, yeah. I That's all you then.
But I don't.
Just like Hard Knocks.
But I don't remember.
Anybody needs anything on 87 Denver Bills, that's Bulldog.
Hard Knocks tonight. Yeah. I don't remember this. I don't remember this Kelly play, though.
He also, I should have looked up who threw the pass. In 1988, the Mike Shope game, where I get the field goal net.
Okay.
He catches a 5-yard pass from Rob Riddick on a 3rd and 10. And then
they punt.
They missed a field goal.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
In that one. So those were, and then they put a stop to it. No more throwing to Jim Kelly.
3rd and 10, you're throwing a halfback option pass to your quarterback. Why you got to get so cute?
That's what they were doing. They were out of ideas. Like nothing was working.
You got to get so cute.
Riddick threw the other pass too. Okay. So they had a hook. They had a connection, those
they had
two
a
guys.
Thing. Yeah. Okay.
Rob Riddick and Jim Kelly. What was I going to do? This got in my head. I forgot to do it. We decided, here it is. We decided, this is good news. I think you should take this as a positive. We decided that Sunday's Bills-Bears game was not the worst Bills game ever.
We did?
Well, didn't we?
I don't know.
Is that up for debate, whether that was the worst game ever? What is?
It definitely isn't the worst Bills game ever, no.
What is the worst game ever? It can't be a preseason game, of course.
No, right.
What is? You could look at this as like 13 seconds is the worst Bills game ever. But I don't think I would.
No.
I'm thinking more of just like an absolute.
It's one of the most painful games ever,
down.
But it's a great game. It's not a. No. Yeah. Beat down or like mind-numbingly just nothing happening. Like
the Browns game.
6-3 to the Browns.
Yeah.
Would be a contender for me.
I'm thinking about that game against the Saints. This is McDermott's first year.
Yeah.
The game ends 47-10, and they just could not stop a running play in this game against the Saints. Just at home, expectations are building a little bit. Like it's going all right. And then that's when they take Taylor out, right? The next week, go to LA. And that might be the worst Bills game ever, too. For two in a row.
Yeah.
They lose those two games by like 100-30 or
then
something.
Then they bring Taylor back and beat the Chiefs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Speaking of Denver, there's
five interceptions and a half has to rank for worst game ever,
or worst half by one player.
Yeah,
that might be the winner for that.
That definitely is. Yeah.
You're talking about Denver. All those Denver home games. There's also one I've mentioned this game a couple of times, a few times. God, it's 22 years. I bet several times. 1984, and I'm 12. At that game against Elway, and the Bills lose 37-7, I think is the final score. Like, that's a
beatdown.
A heck of a score. 37-7. And I bring this game, I think of this game because, like, the place is empty, which is one of these things we talked about this too, that you maybe would not believe that not that long, this is not the rock pile. But there were games that they might have had 15,000 people, you know, less than a Sabres game. 20.
Yep.
Numbers like that. Pretty, and that team was terrible.
Pretty regularly then that happened.
I was one of them in that 84 season, and they lost to Denver 37-7. And I just was not mature to think about perspective for that, but what that would have felt like to people who were and could think about, like,
That is really what the 90s, that's what Kelly coming and, you know, everybody else, Bruce and Thurman Thomas and all of them, all the Hall of Famers, Marv Levy, the whole bunch. It never got like that again, even though we endured that drought for 17 seasons. It just became the place to go in the 90s because they were so good, and it never stopped being that. Even though it, you know, your objectives may be changed, or why you were going there may have changed at points during the drought, because it was just, it became more of a party and less about the game and all that, because the team wasn't that good most of the time. They weren't terrible usually, but they weren't a real contender or anything. But the attendance always sort of stayed steady. There was never really, I mean, considering the Toronto stuff, how vulnerable we felt about Ralph Wilson's age, so many things. It never got, like, if the stadium had ever looked like it looked in 1984, during that time, I think there would have been a lot of panic. There was already. There was plenty of concern, legitimate concern, about the future of the team. But their attendance never really suffered after the 90s. Once they got up and running in 88, you know, they didn't sell. I mean, they didn't sell out the comeback game. I mean, it was not a sellout. They didn't sell out a playoff game, which might sound insane to someone who's 25 years old right now. Like, what? that team with those guys didn't sell out a playoff game? Yeah, no. They were down a little. It was a wild card game. But
they might have been 11-5, but still.
Right, but still, it was not, you know, half empty. I mean, it just, whatever. It was still a lot of people were there. I mean, way more claim that they were there.
Yes.
Or at least stayed, anyway.
11-5 is correct. They were second to Miami. One little odd stat about the Bills-Broncos series. So since 1969, they've played 26 times, including playoffs. 20 were at home.
Hmm.
6 games in Denver since the late 60s.
Why is that so disproportionate?
It's just the randomness of the schedule. I mean, the two playoff games,
yeah,
you have the better record.
Right.
But yeah, it's just the randomness of the schedule. And you didn't line up with Denver when they weren't in the, you know, when your divisions weren't matched.
Right, right.
And then when they were, they would alternate. Like, that's what's happened since. Right. But yep, 26 meetings. That's not their entire history. They played, you know, all the time in the AFL. But 68 on, 26, 69 on, 26 meetings, 20 of those games were here, and 6 were in Denver. I mean, is there a petition to change that anywhere out there?
Denver
won. We had this with the Chiefs. Why are the Bills always going to Kansas City? And it was the same thing. And the fact that Kansas City had the better season, so in the playoffs they would go to Kansas City. Right. This year, though, the game, again, like last year, the regular season game is here. And the Chiefs are here next year, too.
Oh, yeah? All right. I believe you. I have no idea. I never know this far ahead of time. I'm not judging you that you do. It's great that you know. Knowledge is good.
It's also really... Who needs it anymore? I mean, that's sarcastically. Just look it up. But that's one where they flip every 3 years, and it would be 20 in the regular season. In 23 was at Arrowhead. That might be the Kadarius Toney play game. And now the next in that particular aspect of the rotation, the next meeting would be here. Maybe that's week one.
After the Bills beat them in the AFC Championship game.
You know, new stadium.
Yep.
Sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.